This is Molly Lannon Kenny, and this is Transparent Yoga and Everyday Life, a podcast.
My name is Jocelyn, and I'm a student of Molly's at the Samaria Center. At the front of the yoga studio, there is a gorgeous and extensive altar with framed pictures of spiritual leaders like Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, Ganesha. There are candles, fresh flowers, incense burning, all arranged on sections of cut trees. This makes the space feel sacred and sanctified, and for me personally, has been a powerful reminder that asana practice is just one way that we nurture ourselves and our community. Today, I asked Molly, why do we make altars and how?
I have long asked my students to create altars for themselves. I think altars are a really important way for us to orient ourselves to our spiritual practice, whatever that is. And then I have a couple things to say about altars in general, and then I'll expand that to what I would call a puja table. So the first thing that I often tell my students is that a lot, when you start to get into yoga, it seems like you know, every store you go to, you're like, ooh, look at this cute little Ganesha, I'm going to buy that. Or, oh, look at this cool candle that says Anahata Chakra, I'm going to buy that. And then all your friends and family are giving you these little yoga-y things, and you maybe put them on a shelf someplace, and then maybe you end up calling that your altar. And what I sometimes say lovingly to my students is that that's not your altar, that's like your tchotchke table. That's like where you're just keeping all your like yoga-related stuff. I actually recently read an article on something on the internet. Sometimes as a teacher, I feel like I have to bring up certain things just to illuminate what I'm talking about and what I'm not talking about. And anyway, it was this article that somebody wrote about how to create an altar. And one of the things she said was, and you could tear out a picture of that cute guy that you wanted and put that up on your altar. And so you could bring that cute guy into your life. And I didn't really connect with that, because I wouldn't suggest to my students that you rip out a picture of some cute guy and put it on your altar, because I don't think that that's what it's about. Your altar is about honoring God and about honoring your spiritual practice. You're opening up the space for you to have a conversation with the divine and to talk about the things that you would like to call into your life. You're not necessarily like setting those things there and saying what it is that you want. But, you know, that's just me. And I have a very uptight side to me. I always talk about having this alter ego that's called uptight yoga lady. And then as some of my students have, and my husband have pointed out, that doesn't really have to be the alter ego, be the primary ego. So a puja is like a ritual or, yeah, it's a ritual. So you would do a puja, like you could do a puja for anything. Like we've done a puja for the opening of the Samaria Center, the closing of the Samaria Center. You could do a puja because you got married, or a puja because you wanted something to change. So a puja refers to a ritual. So a puja table then would be a table or an altar that you might have in your home that would have all of the different objects, the ritual objects for your practice. So when we think about an altar, we would want to think of it as being something that felt very sacred and very special. And so, for example, we wouldn't just put anything on that altar. I wouldn't set down my cup of coffee on that altar because, you know, it was the shelf was at the right height. So I'm very aware of what's going on to that altar. I also want to interact with the altar. You're definitely cleaning it and you're dusting it and you're picking up all of the different objects. It actually even makes me think about a wonderful teacher that we used to have at the Samaria Center, Valerie Holt, who's gone on to make a great musical career. She was a house cleaner at some time, and she used to clean my house too. And she actually said to me how it was so interesting to her that she picked up people's stuff more than they did, right? Like there were so many things on their shelves that they never touched, but she would touch them and interact with them because she was cleaning them. And that always stuck in my mind, that we have all these things that just sort of clutter our homes that we're not really interacting with in any way. And so when I think about that, interacting with the altar, even just the cleaning it, the dusting it, cleaning of each of the statues, I also say to my students that for me, the more distant I feel from my sense of myself or my sense of God or my sense of my own true nature, the more ritualized I become. And so I do more ritual the further away I feel. So I like to have all those things right there for myself. And I just feel it's just an incredibly powerful way for us to stay connected to our spiritual practice, stay connected to God, if that is a paradigm that we want to stay connected to. But if nothing else, outside of anything about God or faith, I would say even if I want to really slow myself down and do some of the practices like the breathing practices that I know that just from a neurophysiologic level are going to bring me a sense of contentment and peace and spaciousness and ease, that I might be in a world that's so busy, I might be more likely to set aside time for that when I create a little bit of ritual around it. So even if it's just breathing for breath's sake, which I don't think can be separated from God, and neither does the Bible. And neither do any of the mystic Sufis. Give me light, give me life, keep me free from birth, give me hope, help me cope with this heavy load, trying to touch and reach you with heart and soul. You could have a flame on your altar. Most people might, you know, probably have some kind of a candle, just as that representation, either as a point of focus. That's called trataka or tratak, when people meditate on a candle. Or it could just be like that's sort of your devotional ritual you do. You light a candle and that gives you a certain feeling. In Sanskrit, that's called bhav, B-H-A-V. Bhav is like the mood that you're setting. So it might be like the setting of the mood. It could also be the candle itself representing God. And in that case, you could think of that even as the term Ishta Devata, which is, well, yeah, I guess you could still think of that as Ishta Devata, like a personal God. It's the representation. It's like the tangible representation of the intangible, which we would say is God or Brahman. And so that might be something you'd have, the candle. Incense is nice if you can tolerate incense, because incense very much sets a mood, also creates that bhav. Also, different kinds of incense are said to have clearing and purifying properties, or also properties that are like calling attention to you in that moment. Like you're wanting God or source or whatever's attention to be directed to you in that time. Oftentimes people have a bell. I have a bell on my altar. In many Hindu temples, you'll find a bell and people ring that bell, again, as sort of calling attention to the now, calling attention to you being here. This is going to happen now. I'm starting this process, or look at me, or I've come into your space. So a bell is a nice thing to have. Photos and statues of anything that's meaningful to you. Like on my altar, for example, I have pictures of Radha and Krishna because I am so connected to the idea of divine love. I have a picture of Hanuman because Hanuman connects me to the lineage of Ramdas and Maharaji, and Hanuman also signifies like that ultimate devotion. I have a picture of Jesus Christ because I believe in Christ consciousness as one of the most powerful images of caring for one another that I've seen in any mystic tradition. I have a statue of Kuan Yin because I love Kuan Yin and what she signifies in terms of mercy and compassion. And so I might have some different objects on the altar. And then again, interacting with them, you might also do things like, so I use kumkum. Kumkum is the powder that people might use in an Indian temple to put on your third eye. It's usually made of turmeric. It can also be made of sandalwood, can also be made of sacred ash. But oftentimes in India, not only would you put that on yourself, but you would put it on all of your statues. And so I'll do that too. Like I'll clean the altar, clean all the statues, clean the pictures, and then also put kumkum on them. So it's just my way of like, I'm really present with them. So, and the difference, I guess, between an altar and a puja table, I don't know technically what that difference is, but in my mind, like I've had altars before that are just kind of like, they're around my house. Like this is a reminder. I have a lot of altars in my house. There's these different signifiers around me about the way I want to live my life. My puja table is different in that it has not only the representations, but all of the ritual objects that I would need to, not that I would need, but that I like to have at my disposal as part of my practice. And oh, another one that I didn't mention is in addition to a candle, I, as much as I can, use ghee, lamps that are made from ghee. And because I feel like that adds a whole other level of intentionality, because I have to make the ghee and then I have to heat the ghee up and then I have to pour it into the candle and put the wick in it in order to light it. So that whole ritual prior to the ritual, it's all like this convergence into the moment. So the things that I just named are all things that I use: a bell, ghee, kumkum, any kind of, yeah, I said candle or lantern, and different kinds of pictures. Malas. So I use a mala, and I have a lot of malas that are on my statues. I am not Indian, and I'm not of Indian descent. It's not like a familial thing to me to have had this be part of my life. So I'm sure that certainly someone who grew up in a Hindu culture and a practicing Hinduism would probably have a lot of other things that I'm not thinking of right now, like betel leaves and different kinds of rice and water. Oh, I have water from the Ganges on my altar too. But those are some things I can think of. Betel leaves, fruit, all different kinds of fruit. That's another thing people do, is they put fruit on their altar, bananas, oranges, whatever, little pieces of food, little cookies. It's like you're giving that. It's like when people leave chocolate chip cookies for Santa, right? It's the same kind of thing. It's like, I want this to be pleasing to you. So the other thing I just wanted to mention is that I was listening to something recently. It was on another podcast called On Being, which I listen to a lot and I often recommend to my students. And it was this guy whose name I can't remember. It was Reza something or other. And he was talking about Islam, basically, and sort of deconstructing Islam. And he gave this really good definition talking about the difference between religion and faith. And I really loved the way he was putting this. So when we are using an altar, using a puja table, to me, this falls into the realm of like religiosity. And religiosity is separate from faith, but related. So what this guy was saying was suggesting that religion is the language that we use to talk about our faith, right? So it's like the common things that we do or say that point us back to faith. And that at the end, it's just the faith is what really matters. But we often need something to frame that, a way to express our experience. And so when we're doing something like working with our altar, we want to actually remember both sides of that, that we're speaking the language to honor the faith. And at the same time, we have the faith, even if we don't have the language or we're not using those objects. And so we also don't want to get into a thing where we're just attending to the altar, but we're not attending to the faith that's behind it.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of Transparent. Let us know about the altars that you've created on our Facebook page. You can find us online on Facebook, search for the Samaria Center, or check out our website, samariacenter.org. The Samaria Center is a community-based organization dedicated to individual transformation and radical social change. If you'd like to support our mission, find us at samariacenter.org.